Gadius Maximus sends in $10, and he says, "I've been misled. I thought Rich Men North of Richmond was just a good tune that disparages the system from a normal dude. Turns out it's a conning psyop to distract me from being racist. How will I ever recover?" Well, I wrote an entire piece on that song, which I didn't even listen to in full, but I didn't need to in order to write some things about it. And that article is on Countercurrents. And then I just wrote a follow-up to it. It is a follow-up because it's about the importance of art, and art includes music and folk songs. And basically, you know, the gist of it is, I don't really care if Oliver Anthony was a psyop created by Conink, or whether he was simply taken advantage of by Conink after the song went viral. And I don't really even care if he is a libtard or a normie. The fact of the matter is, a song that expressed populist ideas, that took on the establishment, that put a finger in the eye of the establishment, was extremely popular. I think it's now at like 20 million views on YouTube. And I personally don't really like the song. I thought it was a bit awkward. I thought the lyrics were a bit, well, not very profound or well-written. I thought the rhyme scheme was a bit wonky, but none of that really matters. And I just think that, you know, sometimes we need to take advantage of little victories that come our way. But even more importantly, stop waiting for other people to do our work for us. And this is, again, the theme of the night, like with the Home Institute and Greg Johnson saying, you know, rather than waiting for someone else to ask these questions and do these polls, I should just do them myself. And so the follow-up thing that I wrote was basically just guidelines for people in this movement who would like to create art, who have that artistic capability and spirit, because what happens a lot of times is that someone like Oliver Anthony rises up, and, you know, whether it's usually it's a politician, but sometimes it's a pop culture figure, and, you know, they say or they do some of the right things, and we get all excited, and then very quickly it turns out that this politician or this public figure, this pop culture figure, well, they don't really live up to our expectations. Well, then we need to start doing our own work for ourselves and stop relying on someone to rise up from the mainstream. And so, of course, Oliver Anthony isn't exactly on our side of things. You know, he's just a normal guy from Virginia who's a bit fed up with some things. Okay, well, rather than dissecting him as a person, or coming up with conspiracy theories that he's a conning psyop, just use the song as a metapolitical tool to get more people to be eventual respondents on a Homeland Institute poll that say, yes, I definitely believe that the Great Replacement is happening, and I disapprove of it. I want it to stop, and in fact, I want it to be reversed. That's all you need to do. So I've gone on a bit of a rant there, but I'll throw it to you too. Do you have any thoughts on this song from Oliver Anthony?
Well, I wasn't crazy about the song myself, but again, that doesn't matter. I think country music generally is some of the best American music because a lot of country music has great narratives, witty lyrics. It's very real. It's very down to earth. And so I have a admiration of country music, and I maybe a bit of a snobbery about country music, not against it, for it. And I just didn't think it was all that great as country music goes. However, I like the fact that this is a guy who was expressing populist sentiments, and it did really well. That's great. That shows something about the people. And it shows something about the ability of people to come out of nowhere, with, you know, go viral in social media and on these platforms and suddenly have a career and some influence. And it really annoyed me that it received so much jaundiced commentary from people who should have been happy with it. We mm-hmm. want many, many examples of plucky upstarts becoming big using social media and cheap technology and stuff like that. That's what we're trying to do, right? We're creating a movement out of nothing with a few little websites and microphones and headphones and things like that on social media, on our own platforms. We're creating a movement out of nothing. This was made possible by the internet. This, and he's done the same thing. And when we see these things happening, the last thing I like is people saying, this has got to be astroturfed, which is basically saying this isn't anything authentic, grassroots at all. This is the establishment creating this person. Well, that is just, I'm sorry, that if it's true, then it's hopeless. The people who push the strong, it's all fake, conspiratorial narratives are basically just preaching that it's hopeless to go up against the establishment. That's what the establishment wants us to believe, but that's certainly not what I want to believe. I wonder whose side these people are on. I can out-schizo these schizos very quickly by just pointing out that their narrative is defeatist and basically denies that we have any agency or ability or space to move to change things. When it's obviously false. That's a false narrative that they're pushing. And they're pushing the narrative that the establishment is all powerful, that it creates every all opposition and so forth. Again, that's false. And if it's true, we have no chance. So anyway, I just didn't like that. I think your commentary in the first article was very good, that part of it is just that people have to have hot takes. All these people are out there and they see something like this coming along and they've got to have some, deep hot take on it, something cynical. Just the amount of cynicism this poor man has been subjected to really offends me, to be perfectly honest. Again, the song isn't my cup of tea. It's not the exact message I put out there, but it's a good message because it's populist. It really smokes out the Republicans who are suddenly saying, it's not right to blame the rich. It's like, dude, we live in an oligarchy. This person has named the nature of the regime and he's located it. It's in the north. It's north of Richmond. It's around D.C. and points further north than that. The Eastern liberal oligarchy is the establishment that we're fighting against. He named that. So I think it's a pretty it was a pretty good start. Now, the schizo paranoid narratives on the right were all wrong, as it turns out, with this guy. And yet some of these people are taking victory laps and pumping their fists in the air when this guy, when cameras and microphones were put in his face after manufactured media outrage and, just sort of lib outrage about this guy. Apparently, National Public Radio did a whole hour about this guy's song where they had experts coming on and talking about how it was full of disinformation and things like sins, like fat shaming, right? The establishment didn't like this song, and that's one of the reasons why I don't think they created the song. So after this guy gets all this negative feedback and pushback from the establishment and, has a bit of fear put in him, the microphone is put in front of his mouth and he praises diversity. Now, I don't care. If your narrative and the narrative of a lot of people on the right was, this is a Con Inc. thing to promote voting for Republicans, and taking the wind out of our sails and getting people not to go behind the TRS paywall or whatever. That's their narrative. None of them were pushing the narrative that this guy was being inflated by the Republican establishment and influencers like Charlie Kirk and Jack Posobiec, Agent Posobiec, right? None of them were saying he was being pushed by them in order to get a number one song and then reveal himself as a hick lib Biden supporter. So I don't know why these people are taking victory laps about this. It's obviously not the narrative they were pushing. I just think this is an example of an organic phenomenon where a guy made a song, it went viral on social media, it became a hit, he got pushback, and he felt scared and started professing the civil religion of our time. I think that's what happened here. I think he needs a little bit of solidarity, frankly. He wasn't prepared for this. A lot of people aren't prepared for it. This is very similar to what happens when people get doxxed, right? Mm-hmm. They get doxxed for a racism on the internet, for a bit of realism on the internet. And the terror comes down on them. And the cameras are there. And the microphone is shoved in their face. And a lot of these people cuck. We saw it with Pedro Gonzalez. We saw it with Hanania. And we're seeing it with this poor guy. I think he deserves some sympathy for this. He wasn't prepared for this. I wish he were braver about it, like Gonzalez and Hanania. I wish they were braver too. But you know, the trouble with white people today is that we're all still individuals. And when you blunder into the position that this guy blundered into and starts getting the terror, the rainbow terror, that's a term that David wants to popularize, and I like it. Yes. Not the red terror, the rainbow terror. The rainbow terror comes from it for him. He's not prepared for it. And a lot of these people will just profess diversity and say they love Joe Biden, just like, you know, Winston Smith dies loving Big Brother, right? Or professing to love Big Brother.
Yeah, my two cents on this is that I like the idea of the song, but I never liked it. And I didn't have high expectations to begin with, so I had nothing to be shattered. So I didn't have this like weird emotional roller coaster reaction I think a lot of people had about the song. And really, I think it brought home to me is that when each, I think it illustrates a question that I'm going to try to explore in our polls, which is that when people experience diversity more, do they come to dislike it more? In my opinion, he's simply sheltered and frankly ignorant. He probably does not live in a, quote, diverse, vibrant community. If he did, he'd probably have very, very different opinions about that. So I think that's why we need to explore basically if people are having more interactions with non-whites, are those interactions, you know, worse or better? And I think we're going to find that, you know, reality tends to red pill people. A lot of radicals come out of California. This guy is basically straight out of the Shire. And that's why he's a little, like, you know, silly about this and hapless.
He sort of looks like he's from the Shire too.
Yeah, it's like you can't hate the hobbits, but you have to understand where they're at. They're secluded from this. We're trying to save them from themselves. And to us, if we do have a song we can rally behind, and that is "By God We'll Have Our Home Again," which was basically the de facto anthem of the Stop the Steal movement, at least around the protests I attended. And it is very good. It's about how we've been dispossessed, but we will have our home again. I like it a lot. And I will say that the hippies, they were very successful in using culture and songs and music. How many people, you know, of the non-communist left would have abhorred the Communist Party, but they still went around, basically were good little communist agents because they liked the music of these people who were influenced by commies. Like, you know, look at all the hippie music. I like it a lot, actually. That's my great sin. I know certain people like rap in the movement and they get heat for that. I'll just say it's my guilty pleasure sometimes. And you know what? It worked. People went along with leftist politics because they had good music. And I think we need to start doing that. I think part of our issue with creating a dissident culture is that it is the Spenglerian decline of the West. It has basically burned out. It's going to be harder to create culture, do something original. But I think it's possible. And two, I think one of the problems with this issue of people cucking or being ignorant is that we need to forge an iron youth. We need to forge people who are hard. And I think the active clubs are doing a great job of that. We need people who are both very intelligent and very physically fit. Those two things go together. They complement each other so that we can create a people who are up to the task of the challenges that we face. Because right now, I'll be blunt, we're not. Some people are on an individual scale, but speaking even of the movement as a whole, they are much further than normies sometimes. We need to get hard. We need to get smart. We need to get strong.
Yeah, I totally agree. We have another donation on DLive. Norse Nature has sent in one diamond. And then over on Odyssey, Black Pigeon Pills Pilled sent in, I think it's like an Odyssey token. I don't know for sure. and he asked, Pox's Foxes, return when? Pox's Foxes, that's my handle on X. I decided to use that for my latest account that I created there. But as for when it will return, I'm not quite sure. This is in reference to when I used to do a weekly Telegram stream. And every now and then, we would look at beautiful women and we call them Pox's Foxes. Basically, it was that my listeners wanted a Thursday edition of Woe's Hoes, and I indulged them. But the Telegram stream, I haven't really returned to that in a few months, kind of focusing on other things. I've been writing a lot more, both for Countercurrents and on my Substack. So short answer would be probably not in the foreseeable future will Pox's Foxes make a return. Let's see if there's any more questions or comments. We're hanging around for a bit longer, guys, so send in the questions. And let me check over here on Entropy. Yeah, just to follow up on that, those final points that you made there, David, I totally agree. And I think that one of the unexplored areas, unexplored terrain, is that of art. And I think that we definitely need more songs. We need more novels. We need more graphic novels. We need more painters, and we need more filmmakers even. It takes a lot to make a decent film, even a short film. I know from experience. But I think we have kind of left that area unexplored. And there's a lot of reasons for that. But I definitely agree that we need people who are willing to create a romantic element that is associated with dissident politics and nationalist politics and white nationalist politics. And then, of course, yeah, we need to support each other. We need to support each other financially, especially those who do create art, who work for free. And then when people get doxxed, of course, we need to show them a bit of solidarity. And this will encourage people to be that strong, iron-willed personality that you were referring to there, where they won't actually be so afraid of a microphone put in their face and a shit-lib journalist's disingenuous questions. Okay, over on Odyssey, we have a comment question from Shady Jesus. He says, a lot of discussion revolves around forging a younger vanguard in our movement. Where does Nick Fuentes figure into this? Is he an agent of the establishment, or does he represent the Iron Youth?
David, you know more about Nick Fuentes and his crew. share your thoughts about Nick.
I'm going to be professional here. I'm not speaking as a Holman Institute. I'm speaking as a private individual. Sorry. Yes, the Iron Legion, the Iron.
You don't make iron out of big mass.
Improvement is needed. I'm going to be professional and polite about this. That needs improvement is my take on that. I'd rather focus on people who are doing great stuff, like Patriot Front, the Active Clubs, you know. And yeah, I'm just going to say that we should not be counter signaling health and fitness, or. Yeah, it's such a disaster. I don't want to even go into it. I'm thinking this needs improvement. I'm going to be polite.
What about the first part of the question? I find this question is a bit more interesting than getting into Nick Fuentes, the person. This idea that, you know, we need a younger vanguard. I think this is a mistaken position. I think it's not quite as important. I think more than anything, yeah, it's nice to have, you know, youth on your side and energy and things like that. But I don't think it matters so much. I think what matters really is having people with money and influence and tactical new on our side.
I agree with that. I have a slogan, which is don't trust anybody under 30. That's really my operating slogan in the movement at this point. I do think it's great to have young people in the movement. There's no question about it. But the idea of them being a vanguard, that means that you're envisioning these people as leaders. And I just don't think that that's right. Under normal circumstances, in a healthy culture, the male brain doesn't mature until 30. It's not fully mature till 30. And we don't live in a healthy culture that encourages normal maturation, emotionally speaking. Mm-hmm. And the younger people are, the more catastrophically immature they often are. The worse judgment they have. Also, the younger you are, the less you've learned, both from your education and from life. And of course, the younger you are, the worse the education you've been exposed to, because the quality of education is declining shockingly. And so young people
today... We
really
do everything backwards in the modern world, don't we?
Yeah. Young people today, and I'm not criticizing them. I believe they're victims. They're victims. They've been not just starved of healthy relationships and healthy ideas. They are subjected to ungodly emotional abuse by the system, especially whites. And we're talking about young white people here. I think a lot of them are lacking in the maturity, the perspective, the emotional stability, etc., that you need to be a vanguard of anything. So we need to get over this silly idea. This is not ancient Rome, you know, where the legions would, you know, put an 18-year-old golden boy on their shoulders and make him an emperor, and it would sort of work out.
We don't have that, Alexander the Great in our ranks right now.
Yeah, exactly. We have, you know, people like Fuentes, and I'll be unprofessional here. Fuentes is an extremely immature person. He's extremely ignorant. He is intelligent. There's no question about it. He's intelligent and talented, but he doesn't have the knowledge or the maturity to produce interesting commentary, frankly, in my opinion. And he's become increasingly buffoonish rather than maturing. I've been watching him for, watching mm-hmm. him occasionally monitoring the situation for years now. I've been monitoring his rise for 5 years now, at least more than 5 years. And I haven't seen him maturing. I've seen him getting more erratic, more eccentric, and more buffoonish. So no, I don't think we need a young vanguard. I think we need young people. And I think we need young people who are aware of the damage that's been done to them by the society around them, and who come to us hoping to get something better from this movement, and not just a bunch of backbiting and memeing and viciousness, like the kind of viciousness that greeted Oliver Anthony, for instance. You can't rear up a generation of leaders in the madhouse atmosphere of the online movement. And you're certainly not going to do that if you elevate these youths to positions of responsibility because, well, we got to connect with the kids, right? No, the kids need to be led. They need to be educated. They need to be whipped into shape. They need to be humiliated a little bit. Nobody can learn anything until they're aware of how ignorant they are and how much they need to learn. We got to break that news to them. So yeah, I don't think we need a young vanguard. I think we need a young followership, and a young followership that is educable and that we actually work to educate and cultivate and build up. That's how we build a movement that will change the world. We don't build up a movement that will change the world by taking the emotionally scarred and abused products of the latest wave of modernity with their colossal ignorance and their immaturity and erect them as leaders. We have to make something out of these people. God knows they're crying out for it. They're crying out for leadership, which is why they get in these ridiculous cults of personality centered around mountebanks like Fuentes, for instance. So that's my thinking. We don't need a young vanguard. We need a young followership. And we have to do justice to these people because they have not had justice done to them by the society that should be nurturing and educating them.
I think I'm going to push back on that just a little bit. I think you need a good mix in leadership because young people have different perspectives. But they need to be listening to other people, like how Alexander the Great was tutored by Aristotle. And I think that can be cultivated over time. I do think we will see a new batch of young leaders come up who can do that. I'll just say this. I was in Identity Europa, and that was years ago. Stuff changed. A lot of them are very young. They're maybe not super young, like the average Groyper. But you know what happens is that they grew up, and it was important that they be involved from a young age. Were they the top guy? No, but they were. I saw a lot of potential in that. I think a youth legion of sorts is important, even if they have someone a little bit wiser leading them. And two, one of the other things they can do besides, I include this as under the youth vanguard thing, is being secret agents and infiltrators. Because all these normie political things like Turning Point USA, College Republicans, congressmen, they need staffers. They need young interns. And I'll just say this, I can't go into detail, of course, but you know, I was in military intelligence. Well, when I got out, I would have been embarrassed not to create my own little spy networks of people who feed me intel from all sorts of places, and that network has only expanded. I know several people with little intelligence networks of their own, and that's for us to know the details of and for everyone else to speculate about, but we have some very good young people in some very interesting places telling me all sorts of stuff. And I think it's very important. Also, I think mentorship is important. The military says you're supposed to train your replacement. And that's important. I think there's a lot of issues with young people, but if they definitely can be taught, I do think they need to see it at the table. At some point, they do need to be part of the leadership. Maybe not the majority of the leadership. This can't be like a little group of like 20 younger 20 something podcasters leading a movement. That will be a disaster, but they're important. Like a lot of the campus stuff happens. Like this is, they have to have some, maybe not, it's like the military. There's different types of leadership. They may not be the general, but they can be a very, very good non-commissioned officer equivalent learning stuff, or a very, very good lieutenant or captain. Like we need people, young people willing to basically take over and become the leader of a College Republican chapter and radicalize it, or basically subvert their congressman's office and all that, and find little ways where they can seize leadership. And it's not like the leader of the movement where they're top, I don't know, a chair or on the podcaster, on the grand council of podcasters, whatever, but they're, they have people under them. They're learning how to be a leader. I know we shouldn't have a legion, the Iron Legion Macap boys, but I'm a little more white-pilled and optimistic about the possibility of a youth vanguard or something like it, or at least a youth NCO corps.
Yeah, we need young people, but we have to make something of them and train them and mentor them for leadership, because that's the future of the movement. But yeah, just to put them in the vanguard right away. And there is this kind of cult of youth that people have that's unhealthy. And it's very leftist too. It's very leftist to think that children are somehow wiser than adults.
Well, there's a reason for this too. It's the reaction to the genocracy, however you pronounce that. We're led by basically drilling zombies like Feinstein and Mitch McConnell, who was like had a mini seizure on camera just staring off in the distance like, dude, grandpa, go to the retirement home. You should not be in the house and make in having legislative power.
Yeah.
And also like all these GOP shills who are basically old perverts. Sorry. Like I don't mean to be crude, but it's like there's too many old people in mainstream politics, and they did not train the replacements. If you look at mainstream politics, it's either senile people or completely bimbo millennials, like the latest White House press secretary. I think a lot like, you know, big shot attorneys at huge law firms, these politicians were scared of training people because they're afraid they'd be usurped. So they didn't train anyone until it was like too late. Mm-hmm. And so you have horribly inexperienced, immature bimbos running things and people who are senile. And it's like, there's this whole lost generation of politics that the establishment does not have, and that's a good thing. And I think there's a legitimate fear that we should not become like that.
Oh, yeah, I agree with this totally. And I think this is something that the movement needs to address, too. Jared Taylor's in his 70s. Kevin MacDonald is nearly 80. Peter Brimlow's in his 70s. Most of the people that I immediately think of as the people I respect in the U.S. movement are getting up there. And they need to start thinking about who's going to come along and replace them, because we don't want institutions like American Renaissance to fail once the leader has to step down or die. We all die eventually, right? And we have to ensure a continuity. We have to have a succession in place. I've been talking about this for years, and I've been on the lookout for people who are younger than myself, but highly qualified, people like David, to bring into this and to give positions of responsibility to, and see what they can build of them, because that's very, very important. Selfish old people, I think the word you were searching for is the gerontocracy. We are ruled by selfish old people. I think this is one of the reasons why the COVID thing was such a show-up, because the people who are making policy are very old and very fragile and also very rich and very self-indulgent. And they went completely nuts with COVID. So that's a limitation of gerontocracy. But the worst thing about selfish old people is if they consume the next generation rather than foster them. We have a whole system where we're borrowing against the future to indulge ourselves in the present. We see the signs of this in, say, the political establishment, where, yes, you have a very old leadership cast, and then the people working for them are like two generations younger, often, and very mature. And why are these people there? Because they have not been cultivating a younger leadership cast. Why? Because they don't want to be displaced by them. They don't want to basically cede power gracefully. And so what's going to happen is these people are becoming senile puppets of juvenile goofballs. And that's extremely dangerous. And this is one of the reasons why I think the system is becoming so polarized and destabilized. We simply have no adults any longer in making political decisions. This is certainly true in the White House right now.
Over on Entropy, we have a question with a $10 donation alongside. It's from Friedrich, who says, "Hello, have any of you read I Led Three Lives by Herbert Philbrick? It's about the CPUSA in the 1940s, written by an insider. If you haven't read it, do you have any thoughts about that period? It seems like all the shenanigans described in that book came to bear fruit in one way or another." Gentlemen, any thoughts on this book, I Led Three Lives?
I've not read that book, so I don't know. But I have read a number of books on things like Red Hollywood and the Red Scare and McCarthyism. And there was massive communist infiltration of cultural institutions and the U.S. government during the 1930s and 1940s. And it was only really rooted out after the Cold War started. All this stuff that was supposed to be paranoia and witch hunting, it was all true. And American policy was being warped by communist agents. Recently, I wrote a review of Oppenheimer, the Christopher Nolan movie, which goes on a bit too long. 3 hours is a bit much. And a lot, the last 40 minutes was really, I think, kind of a waste, because it was a lot of drama about the revocation of his security clearance in the 1950s. But it's astonishingly honest about just how massively communist and Jewish the Manhattan Project was. And it was also riddled with spies. So this is a fact that just can't be denied anymore, although the left, of course, denies it and obfuscates the issue. But yes, America was massively infiltrated. The American government, American academia, the American cultural industry were massively infiltrated by not just leftists and left liberals and starry-eyed utopians, but actual people who took orders from Stalin, the most evil man in human history, in my opinion. They were active collaborators in a criminal conspiracy to impose the worst form of tyranny ever invented on America. And they deserve all the infamy that goes along with that. And of course, once their sympathizers no longer control the cultural conversation, they'll get all the credit that they are due.
I haven't read that book, unfortunately. However, I did read The American Regime, which went over, there was a section that went over the whole student radical stuff and how, even though there was massive communist issues, it was eventually the non-communist left that won out. And then they basically nommed and integrated the communists into them and then became the new kind of like liberal ruling establishment in the universities and elsewhere and in journalism. So basically, yeah, the commies just got, quote, they weren't even, their defeat was actually a victory. They just were integrated into something that was less retarded and, in a way, therefore, more dangerous.
Yeah, the 1940s, the second part of that question was, if you haven't read the book, do you have any thoughts about that period of the 1940s? I think learning about that period was, I'm sure this is, can be said for many people. That was one of the, you know, more red pilling moments of my journey to where I am now. And if you find the forgotten history, it's pretty clear that, like, almost directly after the Second World War, the United States becomes the, it's the harbinger of what we're living through now. It's immediately after. And the groundwork was, of course, being laid during the war and up to the war. But immediately after, you know, victory over the evil fascists in Europe, the United States just takes this extremely communistic trajectory. And, you know, it's just fully infiltrated by these Machiavellian-like characters and subversive types. I think a lot of the people in this movement are sort of like, you know, doctors making a diagnosis of a dying patient and what went wrong and what can we do and where did it all begin. And sometimes these intellectual exercises take us very far back in history. And I think that's fine. I enjoy it. I enjoy reading or listening to those diagnoses that go very far back. But sometimes we don't have to go that far back at all. And I think it's fair to say, if you had to speak to, you know, a normie about this, I would say a good starting point is 1945. If you wanted to, you know, start from, find a starting point for where things really went wrong. Now that can be difficult because there's so much taboo surrounding the history of the Second World War and everything that took place during it. And then on other occasions, you don't even have to go back as far as the 1940s. In some cases, in some European countries, you know, there's legislation that was passed, there's policy that was enacted that was only about 10 years ago that can be traced to being the source of a lot of the problems and suffering that we're living through now. Let me take a look at some more questions here. On Odyssey, we have, well, here's a comment by Black Pigeon Pill, Managerial Revolution by James Burnham. Sounds like a preempt of Blairism. Yeah, and actually Academic Agent did a live stream. He was tweeting about this as well, but a few days ago he did this live stream. It's been shared around a lot because it's actually quite good. I think the name of the book that he analyzes is called The Culture Cold War or something about that. And a large part of that is how James Burnham was totally involved in kind of supporting the psyops of the age. And actually, he became the basis for George Orwell's O'Brien character in 1984, because he's just totally unideological. He just thinks in these Machiavellian terms of doing what needs to be done to maintain power. And so Burnham is doing all of these, he's playing all these different sides against themselves, and it's just very, very interesting. Okay, another comment here. What does Pox Populi think about Spain winning the World Cup, the Women's World Cup? Yeah. Well, this country is such a joke sometimes, many, many times, really. And I don't think any Spaniard will be offended hearing that. Certainly no Spaniard who's on our side of things. And I've characterized Spain as a feminist dictatorship, a gay feminist dictatorship, I think at one time I described it as. And Spain had barely 5 minutes of celebration and enjoying this World Cup win before the feminists turned it into a political scandal. And basically what happened is one of the, I think the president of the Spanish Football Federation kissed one of the soccer players as she received her gold medal. He asked her if he could kiss her. She said yes. And there was this moment of euphoria. She hugged him, and actually, you know, she's this butch football player, soccer player. And she, well, I guess they're not that butch, but anyway, she hugged him so intensely that she lifted him up, and he kind of like a beta male embraced her with his legs and everything. And then he kissed her, and everything was fine. It was this moment of euphoria. And then, the Spanish feminists decided that that was their cue to enter the stage and turn it into a scandal of, you know, sexual assault and machismo and, you know, all the things that a lot of Spanish feminism actually has taken Anglosphere terminology and, you know, either used it without modifying it at all into Castilian, or they do it. They make it so like microaggressions here are called micromachismos, but everything else still exists, you know, the usual talking points. And so for the past few days, the whole country has been obsessed with this kiss, and the Spanish feminists were intent on having this guy's scalp. He's bald, but they wanted his scalp, metaphorically. And eventually he did. He was forced to resign. And there's been this whole political sideshow with feminists protesting and having their, you know, their hashtags are all done up. The female football player who consented, seeing the change in the winds, decided to change her story and say that no, she didn't consent and I feel violated, and now she's got all these feminist organizations backing her and threatening retribution and demanding further change. It's a sign of how much work we still have to do, because it's never enough. It's never enough. And the irony, of course, is that, you know, no one is actually celebrating this Spanish team's accomplishment, you know, whatever accomplishment it can be considered. It's all just become another episode of this feminist dictatorship life in this feminist dictatorship known as Spain. It's oppressive. It's insufferable. I wrote an article about this as well called Reconquista Feminista, because the Spanish feminists completely dominate both politically and culturally. There is a Ministry of Equality, which is headed up by one of the most despicable feminists on the planet, named Irene Montero. Although I think she might have been ousted now, because all the Spanish leftists are constantly betraying and backstabbing each other too. In fact, this president of the Spanish Football Federation was chums with the prime minister and the left-wing socialist ruling party. But, you know, every now and again, the party needs a scapegoat, and they've taken advantage of this. And of course, it's serving the purpose of distracting everyone from the absolute pathetic state that Spain is in. Inflation in some sectors is up by 100%. Spaniards are always, year on year, poorer than they were before. Salaries are stagnant, whereas the cost of living continues to rise. Quality of life has gone down. There's environmental disasters, genuine environmental disasters facing Spain in terms of drought and desertification, man-made desertification. These are real environmental problems that people like us should be concerned about and should make our own, because these are matters of genuine conservationism and genuine care for our soil. And we are concerned with blood and soil. And so, you know, in my article about this, I say that one of the main consequences, if not objectives, of Spanish feminism has been to completely crush the vitalistic Spanish culture, the passionate Spanish culture. You know, in my life, in the years that I spent, especially in Andalusia, it's common for men and women to have very good relationships and very tactile relationships. People here are very touchy. They love to hug. They love to kiss. They love to greet with a kiss. And in moments of euphoria, like winning a World Cup, I couldn't imagine anything more Spanish than some happy Spaniards embracing each other passionately and asking for a kiss and consenting to a kiss. That romanticism, though, is specifically targeted for destruction by these unhappy harpies in Spain who have succeeded. They have succeeded in turning this country into something more akin like, you know, the United States or England or Canada, where men and women of any age now are more suspicious of each other and unlikely to be friendly with one another or even have an interest. I know many young Spanish men who have completely checked out. They don't want a girlfriend. They don't want the trouble. They don't want to run the risks, because some of the things that the Ministry of Equality has done is, for example, passing laws wherein only the accusation, and this is almost verbatim of the words of the minister, just the accusation from a woman towards a man, this only goes one way. This is specifically designed for women's accusations to men. It's not, this doesn't apply to anyone else. There's not a woman, a female accusing another female, or a man could have take advantage of this law, and it applies to a man accusing another man or a man accusing a woman of any sort of sexual misbehavior. It only applies, it's the first time I think in Western history that a law has been designed that that privileges one group of society, in this case, one sex of society, at the expense, the targeted expense of another. And so this law allows women just to make an accusation, and that's enough. There is no need to provide proof. The accusation is sufficient to send a man to jail. And so living in that
tyranny.
Yeah, it's definite tyranny. And so living in that kind of climate, I have friends, and when I used to teach in schools and had teenage students, these are, you know, people in their 30s, and then the teenagers in my classes, they all said, you know, why bother? I had one friend who was having a bit of a relationship problem. He said, I don't want to be single again. I don't want to have to look for another girlfriend because it's just so dangerous at this point. It's dangerous. It's not worth the effort. And I don't want to go to jail because I, you know, haven't been single in years. And I don't know what the rules are now. I don't want to approach some girl and flirt with her and then end up in jail for just for flirting. And so that's the reality in Spain. And, you know, these people are killjoys, and they killed the joy, whatever joy was to be had regarding Spain's World Cup win. They absolutely just murdered it. But that's what they do.
This is more frivolous than black women complaining about their hair being touched. Allegedly, I don't think that even happens that often. Yeah. It's like, you know, say if this wasn't an appropriate hug, it's like, if that's the worst problem in your life is pretty sweet. And two, it's like, I think too, you're talking about the whole evidence only going one way. This is on national TV, right? So the whole world could see that this wasn't,
yeah,
you know.
Well, this was so funny is that everyone saw this play out. It's the medal ceremony. All the players are stepping onto the podium and they're getting their medals. And for some reason, the president of the Spanish Football Federation has this big hug with one of the players. And then, you know, we obviously can't hear. There's no microphones nearby. But he apparently asks her for a kiss and they kiss on the lips. And that's it. And she says, okay, you know, she consented. And then later, the media narratives that are so fast. I mean, this has made it all the way to the United States, by the way. I saw this just before we went live, really, like an hour before we went live. I saw that in the Women's Soccer League in the United States, a team from San Diego are already wearing bracelets that say, like, we are with you, Jenny. This footballer's name is Jenny. And they already have bracelets made saying, you know, we stand with Jenny. We stand with you, sister. It's just incredible.
This is why, and part of the reason why in the first poll report that I did is I talked about creating a cancel culture for the right. We have to basically shut this down. Like, right-wingers should not, anyone who's even a moderate, independent, should basically boycott them. Maybe they won't put posters on social media, but they should absolutely boycott
this.
Well,
what's so...
I'm boycotting these, like, AAA huge games that are woke and they're crappy anyway, so it's easy to boycott them. But
what's so frustrating is that they, even though there's all this evidence that people saw in real time, the capacity that the establishment has to create a new reality and superimpose it on what you thought was reality is amazing. People actually think that this woman was sexually assaulted, and the man resigned. The president resigned in shame. They got his head. He was resisting for like 24 or 48 hours. He resisted, said he wasn't going to resign. I didn't do anything wrong. Well, now he caved because they whip up a mob so easily. And there was an Instagram video of this football player, this soccer player, in the locker room after the match, and her teammates are giggling, watching the replay of her footage, of that footage of her getting her medal and kissing the president. And they all, you know, do that girly thing where they put their hand over their mouths and they're giggling and screaming in delight. And then one of her teammates asks, you know, like, what did you do? What did you do? And she just laughs and she says, like, I think she says, what? Es lo que me sale. It's like, it just came out of me. So she clearly consented to this in this moment of euphoria. The girls were laughing about it, and that evidence is there for all to see. And yet this new reality was created by the establishment and superimposed on what really happened. And now, you know, millions of people, it's now gone global. This is now in the United States. Millions of people all believe that this woman is a victim of sexual assault. It's a prime example of Spanish machismo. It's further justification for why Spain needs even more feminism and even more feminist policies from the Ministry of Equality. It's incredible to watch. And like I said, meanwhile, the country of Spain is just getting worse and worse. And the worst part, really, and I know we always go on about the hypocrisy of the left, but they really are disgustingly hypocritical. Over the past few days, there have been multiple cases in Spain alone, let alone what happened in France with a woman being brutally attacked and brutally violated with a I think it was like a metal bar or a broomstick handle or something. But in Spain, and the feminists don't say anything about it. Now you might say, well, that happened in France, so what should they care? You know, okay. But in Spain alone, we had a woman in Bilbao. She was attacked, sexually assaulted, and then they mugged her. They stole her money and her bag. Somewhere, I think in Catalonia, a 15-year-old girl was attacked and raped by Moroccans or a Moroccan. And then in Tenerife, you know, which used to be a tourist destination, but it's now a shithole, a hellhole. There was a gang rape of a girl at the hands of more Maghrebi migrants. And the feminists don't say anything about it ever. They are the worst people. I hate them so much.
Sounds like the evidence isn't just only against men, it's only just against white people. And also, mm-hmm. if I can piggyback off of this, this is a good reason why you should never join the military, because this actually is what happened in the U.S. military, where it's not in law. It's basically exactly how it is in Spain, where it just the only thing that you need is an accusation. It may not, even if they don't prevail in proving it, it will completely wreck the target's life. Like, people will have they won't be able to work in a secure facility or carry a gun. All this nonsense happens. They usually become suicidally depressive, so they can't do a lot of their job. And it's all over a word. And, you know, mm-hmm. European white rules of evidence that came out of our instincts for blood is that you need to have proof, or else anybody will say anything. And two, men will lie too, but women will, there is a tendency towards dishonesty. That's a little bit higher amongst the men. And this is all very Jewish. We just basically get, you know, it's real in my head. It's guilty until proven innocent.
Yes.
Things go only one way. It's all very Soviet, and it's very ridiculous. And that's why there are numerous reasons why you should not join the military right now. But one is that any woman can say anything. For example, two people in a relationship, a boyfriend and girlfriend, they can get a little tipsy, do the dirty deed. You know what? They can both claim that they raped each other. It's completely ridiculous. And this is stuff where it's mountains out of molehills, no evidence. The whole procedure could take 2 years. I saw people's lives get ruined because of some vengeful, petty female drama. Mm-hmm. And it's like ridiculous. Like, it's completely out of control, and it's on purpose.
And exactly. It's on purpose because the effects of this are so damaging. We see this in our own ranks. I've said for a long time that people on our side of things need to pay a lot more attention to what I think used to be called the manosphere. I don't know if it's called that anymore, but the men's rights groups, the MGTOW, there's too much writing of that off, too much waving that away. And because of the nature of online behavior, things become things that were fads or things that were, you know, momentous in their time, they have a very short expiry date, and the online population wants to go on to something new, or things get dissected by all the millions of opinions going across the social media networks, and so then it's time for something new and fresh. And so, you know, MGTOW was dissected, and people on our side said it's the other side of the you know, anti-white coin, because they want to keep men and women away from each other, and, you know, being suspicious and enemies. And I've never really liked that. Now, I don't know what kind of MGTOW figures, I mean, they're not entirely all repeating the same things and all on the same page, but the general idea of men deciding that they've had enough, that it's too dangerous, and they don't know what else to do, so they're just going to focus on themselves and kind of check out of dating and check out of relationships and getting married. I don't think that that is a Jewish plot or, you know, a Zog plot. I think that is a genuine reaction to the subversion from, you know, Frankfurt School types and Marxist types and the feminists of old and today. But those are the consequences. Those are the effects that men and women are turning away from each other. Men certainly are turning away from women. And we do see this in our ranks where we have a lot of anti-women sentiment. I mean, it's very difficult to be a woman in the dissident right. There's a lot of ill will towards women. But I don't approve always in the ways that it expresses itself. And I think it's often wrongly expressed. I understand where it's coming from. And it's coming from all of this. And it's a really, the effects are really tragic, but by design.
Yeah, you want to destroy a civilization, you make it against the rules to say no to Black people. You want to destroy human relationships, you make it against, you just say, believe all women. And you set these little stupid taboos in place, and then you just allow human viciousness to take over and wreck everything. The left really is evil. They really are killjoys. They really are anti-life. And this is especially true of feminists. A lot of them are among the sourest, nastiest people you ever encounter. But it's also true of just, you know, non-feminist academics and activists. These people are often some of the wickedest people, some of the most petty people you'll ever meet. And they create a system that empowers people like them. And a lot of it is just revenge against life.
A lot of it, this is unfortunate. It came to a head in the modern world, but I feel like there is some, like, this personality type has existed for centuries because we have the archetype of the witch or the hag. In my opinion, we shouldn't disregard folklore or instinct as silly or childish or outdated. It's very deep-rooted, and when it's deep-rooted, it's there for a reason, probably for something evolutionary. And these people are just insane, and this... I know Edward Dutton has spoken about spiteful mutants. Well, the hag is probably one type of them. And the interesting thing here is that in political ponderology, I believe it's by Solzhenitsyn, he talks about how about 6% of the population are psychopaths. And in a normal society, these people can't get out of control. They're simply forced to keep their head down. But once they have other people mix in that society, like there are maybe Jews who take after these psychopathic traits, or they start sniffing each other out and working together, they get, you know, people rise to the top in finance and you know, a post-industrial capitalist thing, or in a socialist, quote, utopia, they then percolate and they start imposing their will upon everything. And for the rest of human experience for centuries, for whatever reason, these traits did exist, but there were always these individuals where they became part of the 6%, these traits, they were heavily patrolled. I don't know if some of these traits are beneficial. It's like the whole dark triad thing, like, are some of these things maybe beneficial in small qualities, but in combining a single person, it can be a disaster, especially if that person gets power. So it's this weird thing about evolution, creation, human nature, where it's there in the genes. This is an issue where even if Jews were, you know, barred from ever having power before or not allowed in our society, we would have to not work along, you know, resolving the 2% of the Jews who are the problem. There'd be this lingering 6% that would have to be dealt with or studied or controlled because they popped up. Like, basically Spain fell to the witches.
Yeah. No, it's definitely true. Spain has fallen to these witches.
Yeah, it's interesting though. The ability of these psychopathic personality types to propagate themselves in the modern world, and I think the thing that's most shocking is the trans phenomenon. You cannot convince me that there were significant numbers of transsexuals just waiting for freedom out there. This is a mimetic virus. This is an illness. This is a mental illness that people have found a way of sharing, a way of gaslighting other people, usually young people, children, impressionable people, into accepting. That's extremely frightening that this can take place. Feminism reproduces itself. Hags reproduce themselves through women's studies programs, through feminist magazines.
Oh, it's totally astroturf. Yeah. It's totally artificial. I mean, here it's so obviously a political tool, the feminism here. It's obviously, so obviously just used for politics and for partisan politics. It's entirely exploited by one side, really. But they reproduce themselves. They recruit what they do. Is that what they recruit?
They recruit by basically destroying the ability of men and women to match up. And so they create a world where there are more and more lonely hags, lonely embittered hags. There was a statistic that I saw the other day that we're approaching a world where 45% of adult females will be unmarried and childless.
Mm-hmm.
That is simply the hags reproducing themselves on a colossal scale. And it's got to be stopped.
Because that 45%, we all know that those are mostly going to be white women.
Oh, absolutely.
There's a place in Spain, two places. No, it's one place in Spain. I think it's called... I don't want to get it wrong, so I won't say the name. But there's a place in Spain where 75% of the births are to Moroccans or Senegalese. That's it. 75% of all newborns are from migrants, and specifically Moroccan and Senegalese migrants. That is insane. That's awful.
Well, fortunately, it's easy to repatriate babies. They don't take up that much space. It's just a matter of political will. Go ahead.
Is that, we shouldn't just like rely upon this or anything like that. But the bottleneck is good because only the most fit are reproducing. And the people who get through this, the left assumes that, they can basically take us down with them. Or like their little biological pets from wherever will destroy us. But if we can simply survive, our descendants are going to absolutely hate everything they stood for. Like they will be, I think we're going to face a barbarian iconoclasm that is more extreme than anything in history. I think the boomer generation, modern day leftists, they will be completely erased from history. They will be remembered in myth. They will be scorned. They'll be ritualistically defiled. Monuments will be destroyed. They will be erased, and there will only be a myth about how evil they were. And our descendants will probably have very, very harsh laws against this stuff. And they will be more, probably as extreme as Sparta, probably more. And it's going to backfire. It will be very terrifying because there will be this very dangerous phase where they could, tear us down with them into the mud of this filth. But, I think we will make it through. And when we do, it will be iron hard. It will be zero tolerance for any of this stuff ever again. It will be like how they talk about Nazis nowadays, where if you do anything vaguely nationalistic, you're literally the Third Reich. Anything smelling of liberalism or progress will be, you are basically a Jew, a heretic, an evil mutant, and you will be dealt with very harshly. And these ideas will never come back. It will be the most vicious cultural bottleneck. And people... they always make fun about the fall of Rome. A lot of that is inaccurate, or they mix and match stuff from the 400s with the late 100s or early 200s, and that's completely fake and silly. The myth derived from this will be 100 times worse than the fall of Rome. It will be much worse. It will make Gibbons talking about Rome seem like a compliment.
Well, I'm not sure I entirely agree. But I would like to end on a positive note. And so I think that is kind of a positive note that this will end, it will fall, and the people who survive it, withstand it, will come out the stronger. There is one comment over on Odyssey that I wanted to, I'm sorry, on Entropy. It comes with a $10 donation, so I do want to address it. It's from ABC, And he says, there's an Institute for Homeland Security in Texas with a website on the internet. In the near future, they might find an increasingly large number of people clicking the wrong buttons and visiting their website. Maybe they should be asked to redirect those visitors to the right Homeland Institute.
I like that. There's a Marxist website in South Asia, in India, called countercurrents.org. And I am sure that they get traffic from people searching for countercurrents. And on one occasion, I can think of at least four or five occasions where we've received submissions from people with very South Asian names. But one time we got a submission from a guy that didn't have a South Asian name. And we looked at it, and it was like, well, you know, it's not exactly what we publish, but it's close enough, and it's well written, and it was sort of critical of capitalism, etc. And so we put it up on the website, and then the guy wrote begging for us to take it down because he was sending it. He had intended it for the left-wing countercurrents. This is horseshoe theory in action, I guess.
There you go.
But yeah, so there's a countercurrents pretender out there too. So, you know, we can't let a good name be spoiled by the fact that there are others out there that are similar to it that we might not like. I love the idea of a homeland for all people, exploring the relationship between a people and a homeland, preserving historic homelands. That's absolutely central to what we want to do. And therefore, I decided, come what may, we're going to go forward with the Homeland Institute. Someday, the Department of Homeland Security will only be remembered as an asterisk in the history of the Homeland Institute. That's the idea that's the attitude we have to take about things like this.
Very good. Okay. We'll wrap it up. David Zuddy, there's a comment here from Black Pigeon Pilled. He wants to know, how can I support his work? So where can people find you, or how can they support you? Do you have any sort of presence on the interwebs?
Yes. So the Homeland Institute has a website. And if you go to the About page, you'll find our three social medias. We have Twitter account, Telegram, and Gab. I also have a personal Twitter account and a personal Telegram account. I believe someone linked my personal Telegram account in chat too just now, so that's good. And if you go to the Homeland Institute Twitter account, you can find that I think I'm one of the few people that Homeland follows. So,
okay. Yeah, on Telegram, it's just the Homeland Institute. It should be easy to find. And then if it's also on Twitter, people who use that platform can find it there as well. Okay, gentlemen, any final thoughts before we wrap it up?
I really enjoy just being able to be a guest on the show rather than have to host it. So thank you for doing this, Pox.
My pleasure. Well.
I really think this has been a great discussion, both the first part about the Homeland Institute and the AMA. And I'm just glad that you could host it. And thank you, David, for coming on and participating. I just want to say thank you to everybody out there who helped get this going, again, Homeland Institute. And if you want to support it and you want to support David's work, again, go to homelandinstitute.org. Go to the social media and follow it. And put that new poll out there. The first poll has got some interesting results, and we would like to see it circulate and get some traction. So if you want to help out that way as well.
Had a lot of fun. Thanks for having us on.
Okay. Well, thanks to you both. And of course, it was my pleasure to sit in as the guest host once again. Thank you to Reed Johnson moderating the chat both on DLive and on Odyssey. And thank you to the listeners on both of those platforms as well. Thank you to everyone who sent in ice creams, lemons, diamonds, Odyssey tips, Odyssey bucks, and of course the Entropy donations, always much appreciated. We will be back with another installment of Countercurrents Radio next Saturday, so do tune into that. All right, guys, that's it for tonight. So thank you, everyone. Take care, and bye-bye.